This meeting of the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs, please come to order. It is now 1:04 p.m., Tuesday, March 12th, and we have present Co-Chair Foster, Representative Grunberg, Representative Higgins, Representative Hughes, and myself, Co-Chair Representative Ledoux, excused today, Representative Reinbold, and Representative Sadler. I would also like to recognize the staff today for the committee. We have Debbie, the House Recording Secretary, and we have Claire, the RLIO moderator, and we also have our committee aides, Harmony Shields and Paul LaBelle. Please, everybody, turn off your cell phone. Today on the agenda is House Bill 212, Driver's Licensing Exemption, Military, HJR 21, Military Retirement Benefits, and HB 286, Veterans Retirement, Loans, Housing, and Employment. We will start by continuing with House Bill 212, which we took up at our last meeting. At ease. Dixon, do you want to come up and make any closing comments with respect to your bill, public testimony having been closed at the last meeting?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Doug Isaacson, representing District 1, Eielson and North Pole, and North Salcha and East Badger. Chairman Ledoux, members of the committee, thank you for hearing House Bill 212 once again. This bill, I want to emphasize, is just another way for us to support our military members who are considering themselves temporary residents of Alaska because of their military duty. We already give a benefit to members who wish to retain their residency in their home state. This bill is simply asking that we give the same benefit to their spouse, allow them to retain their home state's driver's license if they're over 18. To address the concern that I've heard expressed by some, and as you see will be discussed here later, spouse is spouse, whatever the state law is. To amend this to be other than spouse would be essentially saying we're not going to give this benefit to anybody unless we have a constitutional amendment.
Representative Isaacson, we are on the original bill
on the
right
bill.
Now. There isn't any amendment at this
point. There isn't. Thank you, Madam Chair. What I'm saying, though, is spouse is spouse. And if we change that definition of spouse in this bill, I mean, at this moment,
I guess I'm thinking it would be good to address that if there comes
if that comes up. So, all right, I will just ask that you pass this and move it along to the next committee, which is State Affairs, or wherever it ends up going, and I appreciate your support. Thank you.
So, are there any questions for Representative Isaacson? Is there any discussion from the committee?
Is this the appropriate time?
I think it would be.
Okay. The members should have been, this is Representative Grunberg, for the record. The members should have been given an amendment that is labeled N as in November 1. Madam Chair, I'd ask that that be labeled Amendment Number 1.
So labeled.
Thank you.
I object for purposes of discussion.
Yeah, I move the amendment and object it. Okay. May I, please?
Proceed.
The amendment, given the fact that this is admittedly, in the words of the bill sponsor just a moment ago, it's a state benefit, and therefore this is governed by the Alaska Supreme Court case that is commonly called ACLU, and it governs the question of benefits given to couples who cannot legally marry in this state because we have a constitutional amendment that defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman. And the ACLU case is Alaska Civil Liberties Union v. State, and the citation is 122 Pacific 3rd, 781, and it was October 28th, 2005. And we also have a recent Superior Court decision and order in a case called Schmidt v. State, 3AN 109519, decision and order from the Superior Court dated September 19, 2011, which has been argued, before the Supreme Court of the state and is awaiting decision. And the holding in those cases is that programs offering valuable benefits to employee spouses that are not offered to unmarried employee domestic partners violate equal protection under the Alaska Constitution. And I am offering this because at the present time the bill does not go to judiciary. We'll go to another committee of referral. I hope it is subsequently referred to judiciary, but I am very concerned about the constitutionality of the bill as written, as well as the policy issues involved. And this just happens to be the first bill this year that raises this issue, but since it does, I am offering the amendment on behalf of a number of Alaskans and the people who believe that the Equal Protection Clause does protect in this kind of a situation. And amendment number one was drafted specifically following the ACLU case, and it will ensure that the legislation meets the constitutional requirement, yet does not violate the amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska defining marriage, and therefore I would urge the adoption of the amendment.
Thank you. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Well, Representative Hughes.
Yes, I should have checked this out before, so I confess, but at our last meeting we had someone testify on this matter and mentioned that they were an assistant attorney general. But my understanding is they were not representing the administration. They were not representing the Department of Law. They were representing themselves. Is that correct?
I don't recall Representative Hughes' testimony explicitly on this matter because this amendment was not before the committee at that time. I know that there was last year there was a bill in which this issue was discussed. Representative Foster, do you have any?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, my recollection is that there was a gentleman online who was working for the Attorney General's office and did testify. But from my understanding is that he was doing it as an individual, and I think that just wasn't clearly noted at the beginning of his testimony.
There is somebody on the line, Rachel Witte, with the Attorney General's office, who is here to answer any questions that we might have. Representative Hughes.
Yes, just as follow-up, because the person that Representative Foster mentioned indicated that there was a problem, I just want to make it clear that so that we're all aware that that person was representing themselves and was not representing the Department of Law.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Unfortunately, I was out of the room at that very moment, and I haven't had a chance to review that person's testimony. Since we do have an Assistant Attorney General on the line, I wonder if I could ask that witness a question or if she would like to testify.
We have Rachel Witte from the Attorney General's office, and I understand you're here to answer any questions.
Yes, Chair Liddy. This is Rachel Witte from the Department of Law.
And I think Representative Grunberg has a question for you.
Thank you, Ms. Witte. Have you had a chance to review the amendment?
Do the Chair, Representative Grunberg, know I don't have a copy of the amendment?
We've just gotten it a few minutes ago. I'm sorry, I did not know she would be on the line. I wonder if it's possible for us to get this to her so she could take a look at it. Even without doing that, have you had a chance to review the bill itself?
Through the chair, yes, I've reviewed the bill.
Do you see any constitutional issues with it, such as I've outlined?
Through the chair, Representative Greenberg, I think there is a potential issue depending on how the Alaska Supreme Court were to rule in the Schmidt case. However, the state has appealed that Superior Court case holding because the state's position is that the Superior Court judge broadened the holding of the 2005 ACLU case beyond what was stated in that case. The 2005 case was dealing with employment benefits, and the holding made clear that it was applying its decision only to employment benefits, and the Schmidt case dealt with the property tax exemption, and the state took the position that married people hold property differently than unmarried people, whether they be same-sex couples, brother, sister, mother, father. You know, there are a whole manner of different ways of holding property. So the state asked the Supreme Court to limit the Superior Court's holding and not extend the first ACLU decision to the property tax case.
Madam Chair, if I may dialogue, please, for a minute. Ms. Whitty, for those of us who may not be familiar with the ACLU case, would you please tell us briefly the facts of that case, the legal reasoning, and the holding of the state Supreme Court?
To the Chair, Representative Greenberg, the first ACLU case, the 2005 case, was brought by some employees of the state, and I believe maybe the municipality of Anchorage as well, challenging the spousal, what they call the spousal limitation in the state benefits program, which did not afford them the same retirement and health benefits as the spouse of state employees. And the Supreme Court found that because those individuals who were in same-sex relationships could not get married because of the constitutional ban on gay marriage in Alaska, they could never get those same benefits, whereas, for instance, an opposite-sex couple could get married and get the benefits. So they found that that there was an equal protection violation there. And they said because the state was in a unique position as an employer, and these folks were entitled to the fruits of their employment, and the state had an obligation to treat its employees the same, they ruled that the state should extend those same benefits to same-sex partners.
If I may.
Go ahead.
And would you please tell us, in brief, the facts, reasoning, and decision of the Superior Court judge in the Schmidt v. State case?
Through the Chair, Representative Greenberg, I feel a little bit like I'm back in law school. I'm giving briefs on cases. The Schmidt case involved challenges by same-sex property in the municipality of Anchorage to the property tax exemption statute, giving exemptions to senior citizens and disabled veterans. And then there was also a provision in the statute for widows and widowers. However, the plaintiffs didn't challenge that portion. But they said that they were not given the full value of the exemption. They were being treated more as roommates, whereas married people would get the full exemption. Their property wasn't apportioned half and half. They would get the full value of the exemption. And Judge Schiffner from the Superior Court held, citing the 2005 ACLU decision, that because these folks couldn't get married, they basically applying the Schmidt decision, the ACLU decision to the Schmidt case, and saying anytime there is a statute or regulation that classifies or uses the word spouse, and he also even included the widow-widower classification, he said that was an equal protection violation.
And you were and still are counsel for the state in that case, right?
Yes, I represented the state before the Superior Court and assisted with the appeal, but I didn't argue the case before the Supreme Court.
And I, as I understand it, no court in this state has adopted the state's reasoning on this issue. The only two cases are the cases we have discussed, correct?
Yes, I don't, through the chair of Senator Greenberg, I don't know of any other cases before any courts in Alaska that are right now dealing with this issue.
And the decisions are based on
the chair.
Through the chair, sorry. Both cases are based upon the state constitution, not the federal constitution. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Greenberg, yes, that's correct.
The Equal Protection Clause?
Yes.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Thank you. Representative Higgins.
Thank you. I'm just a working stiff, like 95% of the people in Alaska, and so we're not lawyers sparring back and forth. So my question is quite simple. Representative Isaacs has a bill here, HB 2112, and you've read the bill. So at the way the bill reads, does it legally meet the standards of the state and the Constitution? What was her name?
Ms. Whitty.
Ms. Whitty, did you catch that?
Yes, to the chair, Representative Higgins, I wasn't sure if you were addressing the question to me, but the bill, like many other statutes and regulations using the word spouse, I guess it doesn't clearly violate equal protection if you're reading the first ACLU 2005 case as extending only to employment benefits. And so, you know, under that ruling as it currently stands, this bill would not be unconstitutional. However, the Supreme Court widens that holding to extend to other spousal classifications, then there might be an equal protection issue.
Follow up. So then, if for whatever reason down the road, if the position does change, then the state then would be under obligation to change whatever bills that we pass through this legislation. So in essence, we really shouldn't be concerned about this at this point and pass the bill as its original form. And we'll go from there. I mean, am I understanding that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Higgins, I think that a wait and see approach such as you suggest would not be an unreasonable one, because as you note, there would be a number of laws that would need to be changed and could perhaps even be done by regulation depending on the statute and the language of the statute.
Thank you. You've answered my questions.
Thank you, Ms. Whitty. As far as I'm concerned, I'd rather take a wait and see. You know, we have the court case pending, the Schmidt case pending. The court will probably be issuing a decision sometime this year. And, no, depending upon the court's decision, we will either proceed as we have been, or there are going to have to be changes through either law or regulation in a number of statutes. There's no point in singling out this particular bill right now. So those are my feelings. So my objection is going to remain. Representative Greenberg.
I wanted to ask a couple of questions to Ms. Whitty, but I wanted to wait till everybody else had a chance to examine her.
To examine her? Is this a cross-examination, Representative Greenberg?
The record should reflect that I'm not cross. And she's a fine attorney, and I appreciate her willingness to participate and her good humor in this. But it's a serious matter. Two questions. When Representative Higgins asked a minute ago whether Ms. Whitty thought there'd be any problems under the decisions of the courts, Ms. Whitty, you were very specific in limiting your answer to the Supreme Court decision in the ACLU case. You did not extend your answer to whether the decision of the Superior Court in the Schmidt case, which, although not binding on a court, is precedent and should be important to the legislature, because we are not a court, we're a legislature, and we should be looking at any legal precedent in this state. That's my view. do you believe that, what would your answer be to Representative Higgins' question after examining the decision and order in the Schmidt case, Ms. Witte?
To the chair, Representative Grunberg, although the judge in the Schmidt case did use quite expansive language to describe the holding and the use of the word spouse or widow and widower, the facts of that case were limited to a property tax exemption challenge and whether the state had a reasonable basis for the classification made in that statute. And so I think with any statute, and you would have to look at the circumstances of that particular statute and whether or not there's a reasonable basis for the classification in that statute.
I'd like to pop something in here. Ms. Witte, isn't it correct that Superior Court cases are not considered precedent by the Supreme Court, and that in Supreme Court briefing there's actually some court rules that say that you're actually not even supposed to be citing Superior Court cases as precedent?
It's correct that the Superior Court case is not binding on the Supreme Court. I guess I understood Representative Grunberg is asking whether the legislature should take note that of the Superior Court case and whether it is applicable here. But you're correct, it's not binding on the Supreme Court, and it's not binding on the legislature if it's dealing with a different statute.
And it's not binding on any other Superior Court, correct?
Correct.
It has absolutely no precedential value.
Representative Chalidou, that's correct.
Thank you. Go ahead, Representative Grunberg.
Not to dispute with the other lawyer on the committee. But it is precedent. It may not be binding precedent. But it is precedent. Precedent means that there is a holding and reasoning that either the court or the legislature may look to. It's not bound by it, but it is precedent, isn't it, Ms. Witte?
To the chair, Representative Grunberg, it is precedent of a certain for certain cases in certain administrative bodies. It's not precedential for the legislature. In this case.
Do you have any authority for that last statement?
To the chair, Representative Grunberg, I can follow up. I don't have any citations.
No, the reason I'm asking that is because in my 20-year career in this body, I have never heard that statement, that issue addressed, whether a Superior Court decision is precedent, not binding precedent, but precedent that the legislature can look to. And I do have a copy of Sutherland's statutory construction set in my office, if anybody wants to look at it, which I probably will. But we'll leave that. And I had only one other question.
Thank you.
This case, the Schmidt case, was decided September 15th, 2011, it actually was issued probably a little bit before that. 16th of September, 2011, which is over 2 years ago. The case was argued in the state Supreme Court in October 2012, nearly a year later. And about a year and a half ago, almost a year and a half ago, we should be expecting a decision from the Supreme Court fairly soon on that, should we not?
To the chair, Representative Grunberg, it's my understanding that usually the Supreme Court doesn't take longer than 15 months at the outside. But it's difficult to say. I don't know that there's any requirement that they issue it by a certain date.
So if we were to wait, we wouldn't probably have to wait too long. I just am saying that.
I guess my response to that is that this bill has another committee of referral. It has the House floor. It's got the Senate and the other body. And so if perchance the Supreme Court issues an opinion affirming the Schmidt case, that it could be taken up at any of those times. So do you still maintain your amendment, Representative Grunberg?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Then I guess we need to have a roll call vote because I'm maintaining my objection.
May I make a comment prior to
that? Go ahead.
I just want to make a comment prior to that. Learning what I have heard here today, I will carry that objection with you. In that we don't have a binding precedent and that there is a pending court case and that there's a journey yet that this legislation must just continue on a path, that I am at this time not supporting the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hughes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say that despite there being a court challenge out there, I support this because I feel that as a legislature, it's our duty to also direct good public policy.
Thank you, Representative Foster. So can we have a roll call?
Yes, on Amendment 1, Representative Sadler is not here. Representative Reinhold is not here. Representative Grunberg?
Yes.
Representative Higgins?
No.
Representative Hughes?
No.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Ledoux?
No.
I have two yay and three nay.
So with that, the amendment fails. So we will go back to the initial bill. Is there any further discussion with respect to the initial bill? And that is HB 212. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. I just want to put on the record I support the bill. And this just happened to be the piece of legislation that came before this legislator that presented this particular issue, and my view on the amendment, as well as legal and policy, should not be reflected as my view on the bill. I think it's a good bill, and I do plan to vote to move it out of committee, and I'll probably put an amend on there for obvious reasons, but and I do plan to carry this forward, the issue. But I do support the bill, whether or not it attaches the amendment.
Okay, what is the pleasure of the committee? Oh,
can I also comment?
Oh, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to echo Representative Grunberg's comments on this, that I think it's a great, great bill. I fully support the intent of it, and so I'll be supporting its movement as well. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further comments? What is the pleasure of the committee?
Okay, Madam Chair, I move HB 212 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay, with hearing no objection, HB 212 moves to its next committee of referral. And so we're going to take a brief at ease.
Version N, Madam Chair.
Version N.
Thank you.
Moves to its next committee of referral. And we're going to take a brief at ease now to sign the bill folder.
Thank you.
Go back on the record. So our next item on the agenda is House Joint Resolution 21. Would Representative Lynn please join us and introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Representative Bob Lynn, representing District 23 in South Anchorage, and I'm here today to help present HCR 21. And I'd like to thank the committee for hearing this bill today.
Thank you.
When I started preparing for this hearing, I debated how I could best present HCR 21 to this committee for consideration. I decided that some of my January legislative newsletter article about this this resolution pretty much says it all, so I just going to cite from part of that. I believe our troops expect an attack on the military battlefield. Our troops, active or retired, shouldn't have to suffer an attack by Congress on our military. I'm sorry to say that Congress has enacted legislation signed by the President that will cut the cost of living allowances, or COLA, to military retirees, retirees that include wounded veterans and disabled veterans. It was a bipartisan outrage in the name of compromise. U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina put it rather bluntly. If the choice between keeping the government open and screwing all the military, is that the right choice? Well, in the committee, I think Senator Graham used exactly the right words. Everybody knows there's no shortage of places where Congress should and could cut spending. There's simply no excuse for our government breaking the de facto contract between USA and our wonderful warriors. So that's why I sponsored this joint House resolution to Congress and the President. It's an effort to undo this attack on promised monetary benefits for retired warriors. And I respectfully request that you help bring this resolution to the House floor for a vote. And my staff here, Nick Lewis, he can add anything you might want to hear. Money is important, of course, but honoring commitments to our military is perhaps more so important. With that, I would request an honorable and positive outlook on this resolution.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. Do we have any questions for Representative Lynn? Well, hearing no questions, I would like to open public testimony on HJR 21. So do I have anybody in the audience who would like to come forward and speak on HJR 21? Is there anybody online who would like to come forward and speak on HJR 21? Well, hearing and seeing no one, I will close public testimony on HJR 21. Committee comments? Representative Higgins.
Thank you, Representative Lynn, for bringing this forward. I think it's important. You know, I served in the military for 11 years. My dad served during the Korean conflict and was a veteran, and I watched over the years as our government continued to whittle down his benefits, and especially the VA hospitals, which I think is a travesty to our military and anyone that serves. Our government seems to want to spend money on frivolous issues all the time, but with our military, they continue to shrink the benefits. And I agree with you that a contract is a contract. These veterans signed up under that contract to serve during that time period, and we got to honor those contracts. So I appreciate your resolution, and I support it wholeheartedly. So thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments? Representative Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Representative Lynn, for bringing this forward and for being a good watchdog for our military. I appreciate it as well. And in reviewing some of the materials, I noticed it was a $6 billion savings to Congress. But the impact on the individual men and women, when you break that down, I believe it was between 70 and 80,000. And to think of the difference that would make in a person's life, and I agree with Representative Higgins, you know, when they signed the dotted line and were sworn into service, they had a certain understanding, and it is not morally right to renege on that. So I do support your resolution. Thank you for bringing it forward.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to echo the comments and say that, you know, our men and women in uniform, you know, already they don't make big corporate wages, you know, and so I don't think it's out of the ordinary or anything exceptional for us to say that, you know, as has been said, we need to honor the contracts that we've made. And so I fully support this, and I just also want to thank you for bringing this to our awareness, but also in making it hopefully a statewide issue so that we can all get behind this. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Further comments?
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. I support the bill, too. I won't echo what everybody else has so eloquently said. And I'd just like to thank you for your service, Representative Lynn, and you, Representative Higgins, and anybody in the audience who might be watching. And I note that the Veterans Caucus a few minutes ago, I honored a retired Coast Guard Master Chief, and I would have been there, but we were having this committee. And it's kind of fitting that this committee was meeting on these issues at the same time and that this bill was being considered.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. And I would like to thank you for your service also, and honor and also echo the comments made by the rest of the committee. So, Representative Hughes.
One more thing. I just realized I probably need to declare a conflict of interest because of family members. I know this isn't a resolution, so it's not like we're passing it, but I just thought I'd better put that out there.
Thank you.
And I'll object for record. I would, just for the record, I was going to declare a conflict of interest, but I see that that the term veteran in here, at least according to the backup, is limited to people who have, I guess, been disabled or served more than 20 years. So those of us who served less, like I was in for 2 years, I don't think that this legislation applies to people who weren't in less than 20 years. May I just ask sponsor or Nick?
Thank you, Chair. This is for retirees. Some can be retired after 30 years, after 20 years, in one case, 26. And of course, if you were disabled on the battlefield, you can get a medical retirement after just, you know, months, actually, get that medical retirement.
Thank you. Any further comments? Then do I hear a motion to move HJR 21?
Madam Chair, I will move HJR 21, which is 28-LS1194 /U as in uniform, and no recommendations or attached fiscal notes.
Thank you. Hearing no objections, this bill moves out of committee, and we'll take a brief at ease in order to sign the bill folder.
Daniel, I'd like to.
Representative Lynn. I call the committee back to order, and the next item on the agenda is House Bill 286. It is my intention today to hear an overview of what seems to me a fairly complicated bill language and begin public testimony, but not move this bill out of committee today. So, Mr. Thayer, you've already joined us. Can you introduce yourself for the record and perhaps introduce your two aides also?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Curtis Thayer, and I serve as the Commissioner of the Department of Administration. And with me, I have Nikki Neal, who is the Division of Personnel Labor Relations Director, as well as Kathy Lee, and she serves as the Deputy Director of Retirement and Benefits. And also, as we already know, we have the Department of Law on the phone to answer questions, as well as Deputy Commissioner McHugh Pierre from the Military and Veterans Affairs. The governor has introduced HB 286, and this basically comes from the fact that looking through statute over the past year, we have found some areas in statute that we are not current on, and we wish to become current on. We have over 64,000 veterans living in the state of Alaska. We have 25,000 military members and their families that call Alaska home. And under Alaska law, veterans are eligible for special loan, housing, and employment preferences. However, the current statutory language limits preferences to veterans of foreign wars up to and including the Vietnam War. And the state is currently unable to extend these preferences to veterans of recent conflicts. In recognition of our servicemen and women, this bill amends the preference eligibility statutes regarding updating the periods of service to include the veterans of the most recent wars and conflicts, and extending eligibility for veterans preferences to veterans of 1991 Gulf War and veterans who have served under Operation Iraqi Freedom, and includes provisions that these, when future conflicts arise, the statutes meet with that. The bill also ensures military families receive full survivor benefits for fallen soldiers, implemented under the HERO Earnings Assistance and Relief Act, the HEART Act, passed by Congress in 2008. With this, the Act also addresses differential wage payments, compensation for service members that would have received from the employer during the service member's period of active duty, had the employee been called up to active duty. So in essence, what it does is when we have a member of the state of Alaska, a member of our workforce, who is a reservist, called up to active duty, if they're killed in the line of action, or in the line of duty, in line of action, then their employment for the state will revert back to the day before they died. That way they receive the same death benefits as a current state employee, and if there's any vesting that was while they were in that military service, that is credited to them for their families. There's also provision in here for the definition of veteran, so it can be a state statute for Alaska Housing Finance to allow veterans to qualify for the various home loans. Currently, they use the federal definition, and we want to update our state statute to follow the federal version on this. There is a fiscal note attached, and it is zero. And all across the board. We are very lucky that we've not had any of our reservists called up and where they have been killed, but we want to make sure that what is a federal law, that we apply it to our employees here in state government. And with me, either Nikki can help on the personnel side, or Kathy with any of the retirement questions.
Thank you, Mr. Thayer. Do we have any questions for Mr. Thayer? Then I would like to open up this session to public comment on HB 286. So is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to this bill?
I have a question.
Representative Grunberg.
To the commissioner or his staff. I gather that this would extend private benefits to these folk, but not governmental benefits, is that right?
Through the chair, it will do state benefits, as if they would revert back to as a state employee the day before their death, and therefore, if there is state death benefits or anything of that nature, that would apply to their family.
If that's the case, why isn't there a fiscal note stating that?
For the record, this is Kathy Lee with the Division of Retirement and Benefits. Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, we did ask our plan actuary to value what the effect of this bill would be, and since we have had no such deaths since 2008, their determination was that if we were to have one, it would have a de minimis effect on the plan, so it's a zero fiscal note.
May I continue?
Go ahead.
Does that mean that the state does not expect there will be anybody affected by this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, no, it doesn't mean we don't expect anyone to, but we don't expect large numbers that would actually affect the liabilities of the plan.
If I may I dialogue, please, and I don't have to bother you. This legislature, and specifically this committee, because this is where this committee, this bill is at the moment, needs to know what is expected. How many do you estimate? Because that's going to be somebody we need to know about.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I would pray to God that we don't have any Alaska people, any people killed in the line of action, but more especially our state workers. We have not had, in 6 years, not had anybody that have been killed that have been called up. I would hope that that continues, that trend continues.
So if that's the case, this is more a prophylactic bill than an actual problem at the moment. I'm not denigrating the bill, but it's something that is to ensure that if something occurs, that we'll be prepared for it.
Through the chair, yes, that is what it's for. The federal government passed this in 2008. We're out of compliance by not having this in statute. And this is for audit purposes, something that we could, we're expecting a 2015 audit, and so we would like to have this on the books, but right now we are out of compliance, and like I said, our goal would to keep this at zero.
If I may, just
go ahead.
Do we face any potential sanctions for being out of compliance?
You have. Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg.
Can you identify yourself for the record to help our
This is Kathy Lee with the Division of
Thank
Retirement
you.
And Benefits. At this point, we don't anticipate any sanctions from the federal government. Where the plans are not up for qualification immediately, and it is anticipated if this bill passes that we will be in good qualification status when we once again have to have the plans qualified.
Through the chair, the reason I'm asking is because we'll have to be prepared to defend the bill potentially on the floor, and somebody may say, what is the potential sanction that we could face if we don't pass this? I want to be prepared to answer that. Can you guys tell me?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I think
please
you
identify yourself.
I'm sorry.
We've got two female voices here and one male voice, so I don't make Commissioner Thayer do it each time, but I'm going to make you guys.
Okay. This is Kathy Lee from the Division of Retirement and Benefits. This is a question we would have to talk to our tax counsel about what potential sanctions might be, but it is our understanding, talking with them thus far about this. They have worked hand in hand with us on crafting this part of the legislation, that as long as we have it passed by qualification time, we will not face sanctions.
My question through the chair was more to counter an argument that says, somebody says, well, it doesn't make any difference, we don't have to pass it. So my question, if I might ask it one more time, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Representative.
I noticed you rolled your eyes. I'm trying to get on the record here something that I can defend, because I would like to defend this. If you could get back to us or something, if we don't pass it, and I don't know, I saw somebody looking over their shoulder if the person's here or anything. Just any idea, if we don't pass it, what we might face?
This is Kathy Lee with the Division of Retirement and Benefits. Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, if we don't pass this bill, then we are out of compliance. So when we go for qualification of our plans, and this is three plans we're talking about, the Public Employees Retirement System, Teachers Retirement System, and the Judicial Retirement System. The most dire consequence would be if we are out of compliance, then we lose our tax qualification status.
That's what I wanted to know. Anything else?
We could face fines if we are out of compliance at the least.
Okay, because I just want to be able, once again, if you can get me or the chair anything further on this, that would be very helpful. My experience shows that anything I'm not prepared to answer, they'll be asking. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions before I get into the public testimony?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned the 2008 federal law that was passed and that we've been out of compliance, and so this applies to state employee plans. And I noticed when Representative Grunberg first asked the question, he asked about private, and one of the things that I was scrolling through the language, and I'm assuming that the The AS 14.25.195 defines the word employer, but it talks about employer, employee all through the bill, but I don't see a definition that that's the state of Alaska as the employer, but I'm assuming that the employer in this means the state of Alaska. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, that is correct. This is for state of Alaska employees and retirement plans.
Okay, thank you.
And political subdivisions.
Thank you, Representative Hughes. Any further questions? Okay, then I would now like to reopen public testimony again. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify either for or against this bill? Is there anybody online who would like to testify before, for or against this bill? Well, then I am going to close public testimony here, and we will be taking this bill up again shortly. So, with that, the committee is adjourned, and it is 2 o'clock.